May you all come to order, please? It's okay. You're giving me a bad look there, Representative. I almost went under the desk when I saw that look. we're having a joint committee of the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee today, and we're going to do an overview of the public safety world. The first person I have on the list is Mona Dolman, who is the commissioner. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the tape, my name is Mona Dolman, and I am the Commissioner of Public Safety, Department of Public Safety. And seated to my right, and who will be presenting the overview of the budget, is our Deputy Commissioner, Mary Ellison. If I could just share, before I get started, or before we get started, we are scheduled in two different committees, so I and some of staff are going to be walking in between the two different committees this morning, and we certainly mean no disrespect, and we'll do our best to make sure that you get all of the information that you need and answer all the questions that you might have.
So, what other committee is interested in your department?
The House Public Safety Committee. Representative Paymar is the chair.
Oh, well, that's all right.
Okay. But we'll make sure that, you have all of the information and questions answered, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So we view this initial meeting as a kickoff to many more discussions about this budget and the work that we do in public safety, and we look forward to working with all of you and answering all of your questions. As I mentioned, we're split between two different committees this morning, but we'll do everything that we can to make sure you get all of the information that you need and want and answer all of your questions. The Department of Public Safety serves as the backbone for supporting public safety efforts throughout the state of Minnesota. Through the provisions of enforcement, service, funding, training, and education, as well as legislative policy and development, we strengthen the overall public safety infrastructure across the state. So breaking down our mission, if I could, we strive every day to ensure a safer Minnesota, to protect communities and the citizens within them. Our work is complex and it's diverse, as you will see, and as you many of you probably already know. And it includes prevention, preparedness, response, recovery, education, and enforcement. Key in all of our work is the strong relationships that we maintain and that we build throughout with our stakeholders throughout the state of Minnesota, and certainly the maintenance of trust that we build with all of you and with all of the people in Minnesota. Our agency is unique in that legislative oversight jurisdiction of the Department of Public Safety Operations Divisions is split between transportation-related divisions primarily funded by trunk highway or federal funds and public safety-related divisions primarily funded by the general fund, special revenue, and federal funds. And so with that information, and you can see the divisions on the screen, I won't read them all to you, but with that, I will turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Mary Ellison to give the overview of our budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Ellison. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. We have in the room the directors of the various divisions that you have oversight of, and they will be available to answer questions. I'll go over the budget and a little bit about each one of the divisions, and as you have questions, we will ask them to step forward as needed. The base budget for the Department of Public Safety for 14 and 15, the total of all funds is $608,577,000. Also, you will notice there's a slight change in the PowerPoint that we're presenting to you versus what you have in front of you. We had to get it to you by noon yesterday, and we found a couple errors, so we changed it for the presentation today. But you can see here with the pie chart the various distribution of the funds that we have. 29% from the trunk highway funds, 20% from state government special revenue, miscellaneous special revenue, $119,952,000, and general fund, $169,226,000. Now, that's the entire budget of the Department of Public Safety. The transportation divisions, which now specifically is what this committee has jurisdiction over, totals for the biennium $306,624,000. 56% of that is from the Trunk Highway Fund, 7% from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, $98,176,000 from the Miscellaneous Special Revenue Fund, and the General Fund of $15,900,000. Our payments, our expenses by category are as follows. Total compensation is 74% of our budget, or $227,032,000. Transfers to other state agencies is 3%, $7,848,000. Payments to individuals, $3,816,000. People always have a question about that, and that is the Public Safety Officer Benefit Program and the Soft Body Armor Program that we administer, and the Peace Officer Death Benefit Program that we administer. Is there a question?
Representative Holberg, you have a question?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. In your previous slides, you say at the bottom, total all funds. Are your federal funds included, or is this just total state funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it is just state funds.
So could you get us your all funds numbers that would include all your federal funding as well?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, my understanding is that all of that is going to be listed in the budget book. But yes, we can get that to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So the governor's change items in the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee include the following, and we will talk a little bit about them as we go through the presentation. Soft body armor. As I mentioned before, we state law allocates reimbursement to police officers of 50% of the cost of soft body armor. We're asking for an increase in the general fund of $92,000 per year and in the trunk highway fund of $100,000 per year to cover the increased costs that we have in this category. We're asking for additional spending authority in DBS for two areas, title turnaround, and for an additional one person beginning in fiscal year 15 for our facial recognition program. And again, I'll explain those more as we go through the presentation. Also for the DBS phone system, our phone system is in need of replacement. We are also
How much was that for the phone system?
Mr. Chair, the phone system, Ms. McCormick, can you?
I thought you gave a figure. You don't have to do it
Mr.
now.
Mr. Chair, we will get that for you.
Yeah.
And then we also, yes, I don't know how old this is. And then we also have a request. It's actually a placeholder request for increase in funding for capital security.
All right. Yeah.
No, but how old is the phone system? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is 10 years old. The phone system is 10 years old.
Well, I was asking for the amount of money. I saw it somewhere, and I thought it was your computer system that was needing an update, which we've been fooling around with for a lot of years. But it's not that. It's the
Mr. phone. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry. It's $150,000 for this fiscal year. Is the
Thank
request.
You. That's not where I was looking.
Administration and related services includes the Office of Communications, the Commissioner's Office, Human Resources, Fiscal and Administrative Services, and the Office of Technology and Support Services are actually what we pay to Minute IT for technology and support services. Again, the soft body armor request under Minnesota Statutes 299A.38, law enforcement agencies may be reimbursed for up to 50% of the cost of body armor for officers. The program base for many years has been $508,000. We typically run out of money midway in the year and then develop a long waiting list, and then we have the same problem in the next year. And so last year we asked for a one-time allocation of around $500,000 to get caught up, and now what we're requesting is an increase in the base of $92,000 per year from the general fund and a new base appropriation of $100,000 per year for the trunk highway fund for state patrol vests. that will ease the pressure on the general fund. And since trooper salaries and all of their expenses are paid from the trunk highway fund, we're requesting this amount of appropriation from that fund.
Who pays the other 50%?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is a federal program that agencies can apply for. It doesn't necessarily pay the total 50%, but it's a federal program that is prorated, and each jurisdiction is eligible for certain amounts of money. The Minnesota State Patrol. Their mission is to protect and serve all people in the state through assistance, education, and enforcement, provide support to allied agencies, and provide for the safe, efficient movement of traffic on Minnesota's roadways. They have 788 full-time sworn and non-sworn personnel with an annual operating budget of $83,116,000. For the fiscal year 2014-15 biennium, that includes $158,378,000 from the Trunk Highway Fund, $1,570,000 from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, $6,284,000 from the General Fund, and about in addition to that, they have about $16 million in federal funds. Their services include aviation, capital security, executive protection, canine program, crash reconstruction, commercial vehicle enforcement, a vehicle crimes unit, DWI enforcement, fleet management, investigative services, public information, a training academy, radio communications, special response teams, and federal programs. In 2012, they made nearly 19 million, or they traveled more than 19 million miles throughout the state. They had 649,034 enforcement contacts. They investigated 20,380 crashes, made 5,449 DWI arrests, provided 16,196 assists to local law enforcement agencies, and provided 57,000 assists to the public. In 2012, state troopers logged 18.6 million patrol miles. The continuing fluctuation and, of course, increase in gas prices is a major hit to the state patrol's budget. The governor is recommending an additional $1 million from the Trunk Highway Fund to cover the increase in the fuel purchase. But the State Patrol has done in the past when the budget fluctuates is they keep positions open, and $1 million equates to about 10 trooper positions that we would have to hold open when the price of gas goes up by 10 cents a gallon. The next change item is a placeholder, and it's a placeholder because when we developed the budget recommendations, the study for capital security was not yet completed. But a permanent advisory committee was created last session to study issues of capital area security. One of the committee's recommendations, which was released January 15th, was increased funding. The recommendation is a base increase of $500,000 per year general fund for the capital area security, as well as elimination of current interagency security agreements. This is a placeholder for consideration of the committee's overall recommendations. And let me just explain a little bit about the interagency security agreements. There are different agencies, for instance, the courts and other agencies that contract with the Minnesota State Patrol for security services. And so this budget asks for an increase appropriation, but it also asks to transfer the money that people are currently spending through a contract with the State Patrol to the State Patrol for increased security. And you will see more detail as that report from the committee is released. Next is the Office of Traffic Safety.
Ms. Ellison, I'd like to ask you what the current interagency security agreements are that are being eliminated. That was on the previous slide.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they total $1.45 million, and they're with different agencies that contract with the State Patrol for capital security. For instance, the courts contracts with the patrol for capital security.
Well, who's picking up that security?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's located within their individual budgets of the agencies.
Oh, okay. But it's still going to be the patrol that's doing that, or what?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The mission of the Office of Traffic Safety is to prevent traffic deaths and serious injuries by changing human behavior in Minnesota through policy development and support, stakeholder engagement, program delivery, leadership, and research and evaluation. Office of Traffic Safety receives an annual appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund of $430,000, and that's a required match for our federal funds and one-time monies from the federal government that annually amount to approximately $20 million. The services through the Office of Traffic Safety include outreach, prevention, seatbelt use, child passenger safety, traffic records, data systems, safe road coalitions, motorcycle safety programs for teen drivers, underage alcohol prevention, distracted driving, traffic safety research and analysis, and a fatality analysis record system. In 2012, 384 people were killed on Minnesota's roadways, the second safest year behind 2011 since 1944. In 2011, Minnesota had among the lowest and safest death rate per 100 million vehicle miles traveled in the nation at 0.65. Seatbelt use in Minnesota is now at 94%, and of course, we all know that seatbelts save lives. Next division is driver and vehicle services. Their mission is to provide fair, accurate, secure, and timely service through effective service options, accurate collection of data, fraud prevention, efficient collection of state revenue, and quality information and technical support for staff and business partners. DVS has an annual budget of approximately $55 million. They have 505 employees that work in 95 locations throughout the state. They collect more than $1 billion in state revenue. DVS is funded by the Special Revenue Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. DVS services include title and registration, auto dealer licensing and inspection, prorate driver exams, driver compliance, driver's license issuing, a public information center, operations support, and e-business options.
Mr. Austin, yes. What happens to the $1 billion in state revenue that's generated? Is that directly to the general fund, or is it
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it goes into the Trunk Highway Fund, and it's used for transportation projects, and it's divided up according to statute.
Okay. That's gross figure, not net. After you don't do any of your own expenses out of that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, DVS is funded through the fees that it collects. They are put into a special revenue fund, and then we receive a certain amount of allocation each year out of that special revenue, out of those special revenue funds from the legislature.
But the transfer to Trunk Highway is $1 billion, or that's the gross amount that you generate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's the gross amount that we generate through the various fees that we collect.
Thank you.
The DVS Public Information Center handled 1 million calls and 774,333 emails in 2012. We conducted 558,785 driver license tests in 2012. We issued 1.3 million vehicle titles. We processed 4.3 million in vehicle registrations, and we manage 175 registrar offices throughout the state of Minnesota. The change items are as follows. As many of you probably know, the vehicle title issuance process is causing consternation on the part of citizens, and we've been working very hard to improve our process. Right now, the vehicle title issuance runs about 80 to 90 days. Our goal is to get it down to 30 days. We have hired a process improvement person that's been working with us for the past year to improve our processes. And that has made, we've made some significant progress, but the recommendation is that we add staff to this effort to get it down to meet the 30-day turnaround goal that we have. So our request is for an additional $650,000 per year from the Special Revenue Fund to hire 7 more people to perform this work. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, many of you on the committee are familiar with our facial recognition program, and it's used to scan the database of Minnesota drivers and ID photos to look for potential fraudulent duplicates. These findings are instrumental in combating identity-based fraud across the public and private sectors. We have done the facial scrub through federal grants that we've received. We have an additional federal grant that will allow us to continue with the facial recognition program. But beginning in fiscal year 2015, we would like to hire one full-time person to coordinate those efforts on behalf of DVS. The next one is the DVS phone system is 10 years old, yet receives very high call volumes. The recommendation is to replace the DVS phone system with a more advanced, responsive, and customer-friendly one. We're phasing the development and implementation of the phone system, and so the request is for $150,000 increase in special revenue appropriation authority in 15, and $650,000 entails in the 15, in the 16 and 17 biennium in order to replace that system. Next is the Office of Pipeline Safety, which is located in the Fire Marshal's Office in the Department of Public Safety. Their mission is to protect lives, property, and the environment through the implementation of a program of gas and hazardous liquid pipeline inspections, enforcement, accident and incident investigations, and education. They have a budget of $3.13 million per year in special revenue and federal funds. Their $1.35 million per year is a direct appropriation special revenue, and that's derived from inspection fees that the Office of Pipeline collects. Excavation-related damages reduced by over 70% since 1994. 15% of excavation damage in Minnesota are due to failure to call for the location of the pipeline. The U.S. average is 50%, so we're doing considerably better than the nation overall. The Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety requested sewer inspection program resulted in 58 cross bores identified and repaired in 10-11. I think you'll remember the explosion that occurred because of the cross bore issue in St. Paul, and so that resulted in us taking a proactive stance related to that issue.
What is a crossbore, just out of curiosity?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is it's where a gas pipeline crosses over a sewer pipeline, and when there's excavation that's being done to replace the sewer, the gas pipeline is accidentally damaged, which results in an explosion of the house.
There you go.
It's close. Not
Mr.
Quite.
Chair, I was just looking for confirmation, but people are kind of going, yes, that's about right. So there were 30,000 faulty mechanical couplers replaced after 50,000 were inspected in the MinOps ordered program. Question?
Representative Hobart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And staff was able to provide me with a matrix of some of the federal funding, and I think when in your presentation, it probably would have been more accurate to say total state funds instead of all funds. But what I'm most curious about is facing the sequestration decisions at the federal level, and nearly half of total state spending is actual federal funds. Has your department done any analysis of the programs supported by federal funds and the risk level as far as that money going away? And are they vital services that the state would have to then backfill with funding? Do you have any work on that you can share with the committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, we do monitor the federal funds. I think where we are most concerned is in the law enforcement and public safety area. We anticipate some reductions in Homeland Security funding, and some reductions in Office of Justice Programs funding, which go to local law enforcement task forces and DWI courts and things like that. We're not as concerned about the reduction in the highway funds. Those do tend to be a little bit more stable, but we certainly are monitoring and concerned and anticipate reduction in federal funds in other areas. And then it will be up to the legislature as to whether those funds should be, you know, supplemented with state funds or replaced, or whether we drop that programming.
Representative Holder?
Mr. Chair, I think this is something that's going to affect virtually every finance committee here this year, and whether or not we'll know by May or not. But I'm curious to see the work that the department has done and what the risk assessment is. And in many instances here, you're asking for additional state funding. And I think that the committee should have the opportunity to weigh if we're going to have loss of federal funds and we have more state dollars, whether we want to backfill federal funding before we add additional programming at the state level with state funds. There's, you know, there's only so much money at the state level to address those issues. And it's just something that...
Representative Holder, there's only so much money, but you haven't read the governor's budget yet. There's going to be more.
Well, Mr. Chair, that may be the case, but I think that there, even in the governor's budget, there's only so much money. And I'm just concerned when it's issues of public safety, those things that are funded with federal dollars that may go away, in my mind, should have a higher priority than maybe some new programs that would like to be done. So I think that we need to really stay up on those issues in every committee. So I'm just curious that we get the information that you have at this point so that we don't have big surprises in April or May if and when the feds take their action.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, we don't have any additional information that we're not sharing, just so you know. But we will keep you apprised, and we can talk about that. Mainly the programs that are federally funded through this committee would, if we receive a reduction, would involve DWI enforcement grants that we do, distracted driving enforcement grants, seatbelt enforcement grants that we do, local units of government, child passenger safety, the work that we do analyzing fatal crashes. Those are the things off the top of my head that would be at risk impacting this committee. But we can certainly have an ongoing discussion about that and provide information as best we can.
All right, thank you.
Representative Rundbeck, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, back to the item on DVS staffing, the seven new members, staffers. Is that going to require fee increases of any kind? Or is there sufficient funds in the special revenue?
Ms. Eliason?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, it will not require an increase in fees. We raise more money than what we request to spend that are put into the special revenue funds that we get from then are allocated by the legislature for work that DVS does. So what we're asking for is an increase in the appropriation authority to spend an additional amount of the funds that are already collected.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to play off of what Representative Holberg was talking about. And I fully understand I'm expecting a May surprise that will not be a pleasant surprise by the time it's all done. So it would be good for this committee to understand, as Representative Holberg spoke to, what is a priority for your department in terms of federal funds. But the other thing that needs to be brought into play there is kind of cross purposes. So your facial recognition, just to be one that I remember from your comments, is that used in any other areas of state government, whether it's local police officers or the highway patrol or whatever, or fraud, which would be the Commerce Division, I suspect. So what I would like to know is if the federal budget has an effect on our state budget and your budget in particular, what other agencies use the facilities that you provide so that we are not saving one that when we should probably be saving the other, that three or four other agencies might use. And it's, I don't think there's an answer to the question here. Just
Ms. Allison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, currently the Department of Human Services uses the facial recognition system to identify potential fraud. And the Secretary of State's office has made inquiries to us about the potential use of facial recognition for voter fraud, and we're in discussions and about that possibility. But certainly, this software is used at least by one other agencies for fraud prevention.
Follow up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I figured, I think a reasonable person could have made some of those jumps, and I thank you for that. But I'm more broadly, and I think every agency needs to talk to each other about what they're doing and how they cross, so somewhat cross-pollinate. Because if you're doing something, and certainly Department of Health uses it, the Secretary of State might use facial recognition, but you know, in the ag world, is there something that higher ed is doing that the ag world uses? Or is there something in the Department of Labor and Industry that economic development uses? So all I'm trying to do is get across to the agency heads that they need to start, they need to have that conversation with each other, because I really think that in 4 months we're going to have a rather bitter surprise, and I want to be ready that I don't want to do sequestration and just cut 5% across the top because we've only got a week left of session. I want to be able to say, I want you to come in and say, these are the programs that everybody else uses, and this is really an important one. So that's where I'm trying to go with that.
Is that a response now? Are you asking there, or what?
No, it's just advice.
All right.
And it's free advice, so it's worth what it's worth.
Okay. We have who? How? Who has how?
Yes. It's not who, it's how. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be is with the motor vehicle registrations and those types of things that are out there, and with the advance of e-filing and a lot of folks mailing that in, how are we looking at possibly sharing those revenues as far as with those counties and cities that are struggling now to maintain their staffing at those levels, because they're not those dollars when those vehicle registrations come straight to the state, they don't get that percentage of whatever those $6 or however that much is for doing that filing registration fees. Is there any look at trying to share that when it went back to the units that where those counties come from or those cities that where it comes from? Because I know that they're struggling right now with more and more of that happening. They're struggling to pay for their staff that they're required to stay keep to do those processes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, in actuality, the e-tabs that we do electronically is not that high of a percentage of the overall business that is done. We have looked at that issue. We are currently in the process of replacing our entire driver and vehicle information system, and we have a project that's going between now and will end in 2016. So certainly we are looking at all those options. One of the issues certainly that I know we'll be talking more to legislators about is the issue of security with those transactions. So certainly that's something we're looking at. We certainly are aware that some of the deputy registrar offices feel like they aren't getting some of the revenue that they would like to get and need to get.
I think that's 2016 system that you've got. Are you asking for new money for that? I saw that somewhere, I thought.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have received, we are receiving the funds.
Okay.
As you'll probably recall, a couple of years ago, we asked for a fee, a dedicated technology fee,
right,
that we are collecting to use in replacing the system, and we are not asking for additional funds.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd seen a new figure, and I thought, boy, haven't they done that yet? Because I remember a few years ago that was. Anyway, okay. Representative Hamilton, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, just trying to help out the department, Representative Holberg purchased a vehicle 86 days ago and still hasn't received her title, so, you know, might want to address that. But following up on Representative Howard, he was saying for the counties, have you looked at allowing the counties or the locals to offer the same type of online type of registration in order to get their tabs and stuff like that, sharing the data or the information that they need so they can offer that same thing, so where they can be competitive with the state as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, first of all, we will check into Representative Holberg's title. And
is there a press in the room?
It's the average. The average time right now is 63 days, so I'm sorry that yours has been 86.
It's the wrong way to Lakeville.
So I think the slide said 80 to 90 days, so I'm still right within your range. Right, so.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it changes week to week. So, but anyway, be that as it may, we do want to improve that process. Representative Hamilton, your question is related to the question that Representative Howe asked, and that is we certainly get requests all the time for cities and counties to be able to do e-transactions, electronic transactions. There's a lot of security issues related to that. We are replacing our driver and vehicle information system. We're doing it very methodically. And so certainly we look at any of those opportunities. Is something going to happen very quickly in that regard? It's not going to happen really, really quickly. And then I'll ask Director McCormick to elaborate on that if she can.
Welcome to the committee. You're the Patricia McCormick, Director, Driver and Vehicle Services. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Representative Hamilton, the motor vehicle transactions are the fourth release in our MNLARS project, and so we're building the foundation at the current time for this. And so as we're working through that, we will be getting to the once we have that foundation built, and because of the complicated process that we have with the motor vehicle system and the security needed for that, that's why that is our fourth release. We have deputy registrars that are serving as subject matter experts in every release that we're doing. We're working on permits right now, and we've had deputy registrar participation. We will have deputy registrar participation through that, as well as the driver license release, which is release 3, and then, as I said, motor vehicle 4. And as we're working on that, we have a project right now called Genesis that we're working with 3 deputy registrars as a pilot project, just to see if there are some transactions that we can do where the deputies, rather than sending us the application, will do some data entry, and that'll be electronically sent to us. We're only doing it, as you know, the system we're currently operating, or many of you know, and those that you don't, the system we have right now is very fragile, and so we have to ensure that we are not going to cause any problems or damage or, issues with trying to get our title work done, among other things. But we are working on this project. It will also help the deputies to more accurately do their finance pages, which they have to send to us at the end of every day in terms of all the fees that are collected, because we have our filing fee, the taxes, as well as the technology surcharge. And so that will be electronically put together, and we think it's a win-win for the deputies and for DVS. So we're trying things at a small level to see what we can work on to ensure that we get the accurate data that we need, that it's secure, and that we can get things done in a much more timely manner. So we are partnering at every step with our deputy registrar.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. Thank you. We want to make sure that it's safe and secure, no question about it. But I also want to stress, too, it may be a lot, just a small percentage of the total revenues for the state for this online tabs, fees, and stuff, but it has a huge impact in these small local deputy registrars as far as their budgets. So, again, I appreciate the safety and security, but it does have a pretty profound impact on our locals.
Mr. Chair, I just add that the percent of tab renewals that come in electronically is 8%, and the percentage of deputy registrar tab renewals is over 70%. And so we do get some mail registration that comes in
But in general, the majority, because of the additional fees that we have to pay with the TAB renewal, because we have to have a financial security of the money coming in online with our current system, it is more expensive, and so that's, you do see the majority of people, and we, at this point in time, there's no, we believe in providing our customers with options, and that's what we're doing by offering all three ways to do the TAB renewal. So we certainly have no plans at this point in time to change that process. So they are getting the majority of transactions done at their offices.
Ms. McCormick, Representative Hamilton, does that do it?
Pardon me?
Yes. Is that? Okay. We have Representative O'Neill had her hand up here.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. McCormick, I had the deputy registrars come in, and they have a concern about the retention of the paper documents that they have to collect for 15 years. Can you clarify, is that in statute, or is that administrative rule, or where is that coming from?
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, there is every agency has a retention schedule that's required by rule, I think, but it is a separate schedule that's approved by the state. We are in the process of changing it. We've heard the deputies loud and clear. We know that has been difficult. We needed to ensure that we had the proper security in our system and the document management system that would be able to retain the information, and for a while we were having some we were having problems with our document management system, and so until we had that, we were ensured we would have those copies available, because as you know, we need those copies for people that may have identity problems down the road where they need proof of their licensure. And so we are working on that. We have a draft ready now. I think it's ready to go to the Department of Administration, and we are working on it. I think the deputies, I know they've expressed that, but they have been pleased that we're, and we just had a meeting with them last week. They're pleased with the progress we're making, and it should be completed this year. So we will then have to go through the task of securely destroying all the paper, because that's our next step, is to ensure that there's a secure so that we don't have copies of documents. So we have to ensure security, and that's what we're working on right now, is that stage in the process.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. And so it goes from 15 years to how many years do they have to retain in these very secure storage facilities?
I'll have to get back to you for sure. I thought we had decided on 5 years, but I need to go back and make sure that was the decision that was made. So,
thank you.
Mr. Chair, I should probably add that this issue may be revisited as we get into MNLARS and we talk more about document management and things like that, but what we're trying to do is have an interim step. I'm not sure if we will change it or not, but this is just right now to address their concern about storage, which we have appreciated the fact that they have been patient and are trying to work through these issues.
Another question, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just kind of want to agree with some of the other statements that have been made. I have two small registrars, one outside my district nearby and one in Virginia, and I think our access to them is important for the aging population in my district, and I would hope that as the conversation continues, that we make sure that if you are doing an online system, that the funds are being redirected to the jurisdiction of those registrars. I think it would be a fair way to make sure that we're able to keep those things that aren't too profitable of an industry. You got to sell a lot of tabs to pay for a business, and a lot of them are private. So more of a comment, not a question.
Go ahead. Proceed with. You're done, right? Thank you. Oh, you're done. Okay. I didn't even turn the page here, and you're done yet. All right. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if there's more presentation or if there is time. I was curious on the comments on the facial recognition program and the discussions with the voter use. And is that one of the 17 or 18 uses allowed by the federal standards on driver's license data, or will that require additional legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, my understanding is that it is covered under the federal purpose areas, because one of the purpose areas is for other government agencies who need the information in order to conduct their work. But I would have to get a specific citing to make sure that that's correct.
All right, and then with your facial recognition, you're adding one per person. Is that strictly for internal use and in scrubbing your database of facial images? Or are you moving towards working with public safety and setting up a system where you'll use facial recognition for law enforcement purposes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the facial recognition program is only for use within DVS, so that when you come in to renew your driver's license, the picture that you take at the time you renew is compared to the other pictures in the database, so we can see if there are other people that look just like you that have different names under different driver's licenses. That's what it's used for. And the person, once you do that scrub, let's say we find some pictures that look similar to you, then actual people need to review those photos. We can't just rely on the system. So the supervisor of that unit will be training and monitoring the process for actually looking at the photos to determine whether, in fact, they are the same person or different people or what, so that we can do any further investigation that would need to be done. But it's only designed to be used within the driver and vehicle services system.
And if I might,
Representative Holberg,
is your database of all these facial images being accessed by law enforcement? Are they using facial recognition out in the streets or in buildings and tapping into your database of images?
Ms. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, no, not to my knowledge.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. McCormick, do you have more?
No? Mr. Chair, no, I just was up here in case Representative Holberg had any additional questions about facial
okay.
recognition.
All right.
That was the only reason. Thank you.
Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chair, just one more question on the facial recognition. That's to prevent fraud, we're led to believe. What is the incidence of fraud, and how much are we investing in this? And just exactly what are we preventing with this facial recognition system?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what we received was an $800,000 grant from the federal government to do a facial scrub. And so what we did was looked at the roughly 11 million, did a scrub of roughly 11 million photos to have the software system, which compares features on someone's face to look for similarities, to kick out driver's licenses where the same picture, or it looked like the same picture, was under different driver's licenses with different names. So, for instance, if Mary Ellison is my name and there were other Mary Ellison or other pictures of me only under Donna Carlson, Donna Olson, or whatever. So the system then spits out where it looks like, at least from the software, people are getting different driver's licenses under different names, perhaps for the ability to prevent fraud or to commit fraud. So then what you do is you take all of those names and you compare the photographs that are identified by the facial recognition system, and you identify where somebody simply got married, changed their names, or whatever, that there might be identical twins. There are lots of reasons why somebody might look similar. So then you weed all of those out. And of the 11 million that we scrubbed, we identified about 1.1 million driver's licenses that needed to be looked at. So then we looked at all of those and we pared it down, and I don't recall the number off the top of my head, but we had many thousand records that we had to contact people and ask them to come in and meet with us to determine that they were, in fact, who they said they were. So as a result of that, there were many driver's licenses that were canceled because people didn't show up for the interview or when they, we suspected that there was fraud that was being committed, so we canceled the driver's license until they could come in and show that they were, in fact, who they said they were. So the purpose of it is to prevent fraud. I hope that's responsive to your question.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question. The facial recognition program was because of a $800,000 grant from the federal government, correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that wasn't because of the grant. At the time, the legislature and Governor Pawlenty was governor at the time, was very concerned about the potential for financial fraud. And the Financial Crimes Task Force identified that one of the most common ways of committing financial fraud is to get duplicate driver's licenses.
Okay.
So that was a big concern on the part of the legislature at the time and Governor Pawlenty. And so we saw the opportunity to apply for a grant that we could use to do the facial recognition scrub because other states who had done this, in fact, found fraud was being committed. And so that was the reason that led to the request for the grant and the process.
Thank you. With that grant, then.
Is there a newer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that grant, is there a string attached? Does the federal government, do federal agencies have any access to this data since they gave you the grant for this? Do they have any inroads to what you have on the state level?
Ms. Eliason?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in general terms, no. But if we do identify fraud or immigration fraud, then we would refer it to a law enforcement agency that could be customs enforcement or a federal agency. We're not sharing the facial recognition information. We're sharing that a case of potential fraud has been identified and it needs to be investigated by the appropriate authorities.
Okay, so when you say in general terms, no. So if a federal law enforcement agency made a request for some of this data, would you be obligated to share it with them?
Mr. Chair, Representative, only if the court ordered it.
Thank you.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to ask any questions about facial recognition until it came to mind that about a year or so ago that there was an employee in the Secretary of State's office that was fired because of multiple identification. Was it through the scrubbing process that person was found? And I have a follow-up to Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to comment on anything of that nature.
Okay. I would like to ask you, though, has any prosecutions been, this process led to any prosecutions of people who have come to be found with multiple IDs?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have referred cases for investigation, but we don't track them to determine how many of them are actually prosecuted. We let the police, Driver and Vehicle Services is an administrative agency, so we let the police do their investigation and take the case from there.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
We do have a couple more presenters here, but we will continue for a moment.
One last question, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
please
go ahead.
Could we get the facts then are the data on how many that you've sent to other agencies, how many of these facial recognitions matches of multiple identifications has your agency found? And I don't need to know necessarily the agencies. That would be great that you ship them to, but I'd like to know exactly how many of those have you found.
Did you say that you had a difficult time with the legal proceedings on that, or no? Did I understand that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I meant was it wouldn't be appropriate for me to comment on any particular case. It wouldn't be within my authority to do that. But we certainly can prepare a summary of the facial recognition process and the amount of cases that have been identified, as suspected fraud. But in terms of I don't know the legal answer as to whether we can share the jurisdiction we sent them to. I just don't know. But we certainly will provide you whatever we can within the limits of the law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have Representative Mesa.
My question was answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
That was the same question I had also, was more detail about how much fraud was detected, how many driver's licenses had been canceled.
There you go.
If we could be provided that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, we have, how many we canceled? About 10,000, but we are finalizing our numbers, so it's a little over 10,000.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, did you hear that? About 10,000 licenses have been canceled.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sundin.
That was asked and answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Fitzsimmons.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and presenters. I was curious about what, now that you've used this to go through the backlog of data and what you have, is this a method that there's a plan for it to go forward on real time, so you would identify potential issues right as a person's receiving a license or renewing or something of that sort?
Yes, thank Mr. you. Chair, Representative Fitzsimmons, the next stage of the facial recognition, which relates to the budget request item that we have, is that the beginning in April of this year, we will then have the facial recognition system installed as a regular part of renewing your driver's license. So when you come in and have your picture taken, it would be compared against other photos in the database. And if there's a problem identified, then it would be explored further.
Thank you.
Representative Benson.
I just want to follow up to make sure that we're going to get the written report on it. I know you just gave Representative O'Neill a close approximation of the number that would get some follow-up. And I could have done that offline, but I just want to make sure that I'm still interested in getting that report.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're happy to provide that in the follow-up.
Enough already on that subject. How about if we move along to the State Patrol, also an important part of our...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have everybody here and listed as potential testifiers, but they're not. They don't have prepared comments unless there are questions about their respective areas, when they're happy to come up and address them.
Okay. Well, we had a piece on them. I thought maybe we wanted to see if we really had some State Patrol people here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will see them in their fine attire.
Oh, yes.
In the audience. And you have, in fact, fact sheets on each one of the divisions that I covered that go into a little bit more detail.
Thank you. How about the Office of Traffic Safety with Division Director Donna Berger?
Are there any questions for Ms. Berger?
Representative Mason, did you have a question for somebody that's approaching?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Ellison, I guess the question comment is, I remember a few years ago we were just having major accidents regarding teen drivers. I know we implemented some improvements for dealing with teen drivers, so can you maybe give us a little overview of how effective that is and how much enforcement is going into that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I'm going to turn it over to Director Berger because she can give you much more better detail than I.
Good morning. Welcome. Mr. Chair. My name is Donna Berger. I'm the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair and Representative, we have made great strides with teen drivers in the last decade, and particularly since the graduated driver's license law was passed. So when we compare 4 years prior to the graduated driver's license law being passed and 4 years after, we have about a 43% reduction in teen fatalities. Now, I do have to mention we have about 10% less teen drivers than we did during that time period, but it is still, we're making great strides in that area.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for anybody here? I don't know. You didn't have a specific... the only thing I'm disappointed is that we didn't get the armed forces down here and doing some testifying. But
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would be happy to ask Colonel Daly to come down and just make a few comments.
There you go. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my question is of Ms. Berger.
I'm sorry.
You know, the record on fatalities on the highways is fantastic, and I'm just wondering what are the new front lines that you're exploring that may be the next eligible sort of mechanisms to reduce it further? Are there some new ideas out there to identify and go after these?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, typically the same contributing factors are we find in fatal and serious injury crashes, which is distracted driving, impaired driving, and excessive speed. So, and impaired driving accounts for approximately a third of our fatalities. So our fatalities are trending downward, but they still continue to be about a third of our fatalities. So what we're looking at is trying to promote the statewide ignition interlock program for impaired driving, where people will voluntarily, hopefully, take the opportunity if they have been convicted of a DWI to install an ignition interlock on their vehicle. It is a requirement if you want to get full driving privileges back, if you have had a DWI that you've had been at 0.16 blood alcohol content, or if it's your second impaired driving offense. So looking at technology, that's where actually the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is looking at, is to look at technology to assist in the impaired driving arena. There is a lot of engineering technology going on the roads and in-vehicle technology, where we now have two states that actually have vehicles that are driving themselves that they're testing in California and Nevada. So we can only go so far with behavior. We know people are human, and they make mistakes, and they make poor choices at times. But what we're really looking at probably in the next 20 years is in-vehicle technology. And I look forward to seeing where that takes us.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi,
yes.
Any questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our presenter. I have a question regarding when you drill down into the data, the metropolitan area has a lot of fatalities and serious injuries among people who are walking on our roadways and also biking. I know in Ramsey County, we're almost three times the state average. What is your agency, a lot of times they take on statewide issues, what is your agency doing to address those issues? Because frankly, our roads weren't designed to move everyone about safely, and I know that's we're moving away from that and making our roads safe for all users in all modes of transportation. How are you guys looking into that issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, you're right. We have approximately 10% of our fatalities are pedestrians, and in 2011, that number stays pretty steady for bicycles. It was at 6 fatalities for bicycles. So when you look at the overall numbers, that's not high, but we do know that it drills down to the local area. So what we have is what we call our Towards Zero Death program, which is working with engineering, enforcement, education, and emergency medical services. And we have regions throughout the state that we have regional coordinators that we work with Minnesota Department of Transportation. And they look at their data regionally, and they look at their problem areas regionally. Their city and county engineers can look at the drill down to where the crashes are occurring and what are the contributing factors, because they know better in their local areas where their problem areas that we do down in downtown St. Paul. So that's what we're working with, is looking, bringing that out regionally. Each county has a county highway safety plan developed now that they're working on, and so that's where we look.
Okay, and follow-up question, Mr. Chair. Regarding, I think what's very helpful to communities is having the expertise of the department in developing infrastructure strategies that are evidence-based as well as behavioral strategies, and I would just really encourage the agency to look into those and make those as much of a priority as they do for the infrastructure and behavioral strategies, for example, distracted driving or DWIs or whatever. To make that a priority for pedestrian and bicycle fatalities and injuries.
Absolutely.
That program is a federal program, isn't it, Towards Zero Deaths?
Mr. Chair, no, it is a state of Minnesota program where we partner with the Department of Transportation and the Department of Health. putting the what we call as the four E's, which is education, enforcement, emergency medical services, and engineering. It's looking at fatalities from all those areas and getting those people, whether it's statewide, countywide, citywide, to get sit at the same table and talk about these things and what are the contributing factors and what can they do to help prevent those.
I thought that was rolled out. I was in Washington for a meeting one time, and I thought they rolled it out there a number of years ago.
Each state, Mr. Chair, each state has a different name for it, but several okay. states do have what we would call similar to our Towards Zero Death program.
Right. It must be working, except for, I think, last year there was a little blip there, but in any event... With no more questions for Ms. Berger, we'll have some words from Colonel Daly. Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. Kevin Daly, Chief of the State Patrol. I would like to add a little bit to Director Berger's comment about the fatalities of 2012. The commentary about the pedestrian increase was something I was going to mention as well. I think it's interesting that the increase in pedestrian fatalities isn't just an aberration in Minnesota. Actually, it's around the nation right now. And folks are putting their heads together trying to determine why there's an increase in those pedestrian fatalities. Another spike in the fatalities in Minnesota was motorcyclists. Mm-hmm. Many, many more folks are riding motorcycles, and as a result, we're having an increase in motorcyclist fatalities. Something also that may be of interest, generally, if you look through history of the state of Minnesota fatalities, about 50% of those are on state patrol jurisdictional roadways, which are interstates, trunk highways, and U.S. highways. In 2012, it was skewed a little bit more to the county roads. Actually, the safest place to drive or travel or walk are interstates and actually local roads. City streets. It's the trunk highways, the two-lane highways generally, and county roads is where the fatalities, the lion's shares of the fatalities are occurring. And this has been discussed with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and we do offer, and oftentimes they take advantage, and we as well, of working together with the local police departments and the sheriff's offices. If they have a troublesome area in their county or their city, we will gladly work with them, and they work with us in kind on state highways and other areas we have problems with fatalities. I would also like to point out that although enforcement is it's our primary role, as well as education, I think it makes a difference in saving people's lives. We work quite heartily towards educating. We have I don't know if the committee members or Mr. Chair have seen the videos that we have troopers go to present to the high school students. One was Forever Young and then Save a Life. They're impactful, and we're trying to get to the young folks before they are involved in a impaired driving crash or distracted driving crash, etc. We also target our troopers' efforts on areas where folks are more likely to be involved in a crash. General enforcement is good, visibility is good, but if we can focus the troopers' efforts in areas that folks are more likely to be involved in a crash, and even better if it's an area where fatalities are generally occurring or personal injury crashes. And again, the safest place to travel is an interstate. Now we have worked with MnDOT, and we have those median safety barriers. It's my belief that those have saved many lives. Unfortunately, there's many, many miles of roadway throughout the state that are two-lane or divided and don't have a median safety barrier. That's the only comments I had, Mr. Chair. If there's any questions.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi?
Yes, Colonel Daly, you mentioned something that I wanted to follow. Follow up on. How closely and what does the agency do in working, collaborating with MnDOT in making sure that as they do road designs and system planning, that our roads are safe for all users? How are you collaborating with them?
Yeah, we work very closely, Mr. Chair, Representative. We work very closely with MnDOT. Generally, when there's construction in an area of the state, there's a State Patrol District office in the area. and that district commander and staff worked with the district engineer on the projects. And I used to be the captain in the Rochester area, mm-hmm. the 11 counties in southeast Minnesota, and the Rock 52 project, if people recall, which made Highway 52 a much safer place to travel. MnDOT worked quite closely with us. We offered suggestions, some that they disagreed with for either budget reasons or planning reasons, and others they really, I thought they worked quite diligently to give us some things we asked for to increase our response time and to make the road a safer road. So I have nothing but positive things to say about MnDOT and that relationship.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, if I might also, Ms. Berger mentioned the Towards Zero Death program, and one of the ways that we work with MnDOT is we do share data related to fatal crashes and where they occur, and the engineers do use that data when they're redesigning roadways to factor that in to make it safer.
Representative Bernardi.
Okay, follow-up question to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do they provide data for all fatalities and injuries on those roadways, or is it just for people that are using motor vehicles?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, are you asking if pedestrian safety is included in the fatality data?
People on bicycles?
The answer is yes.
Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question is not concerning the State Patrol. More of a general question.
Excuse me?
Mine is a general question. You want me to go ahead with it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine. If you're going
to... back to then the commissioner. Just the subject would be federal policy that's attached to money. Do all federal funds come through your department before they go out to the local units of government? I'm just aware of that there are policies that seem to be attached with money that go direct to local units of government and law enforcement within the local units of government, which really is bypassing several layers of elected officials, in particular local elected officials. So I'm just curious about that area and if what is the practice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, there's a wide variety of practices. The federal government does have some funds that go through the state, and the state allocates them out, particularly in the justice area, as you mentioned. But then local agencies can also apply for money, some money directly to the federal government, and then we really don't have any say in that. Normally, they have to go through their county commission or their, city council to get approval to apply for the funds, but that isn't something that we control at the state level. So it's really a mixed bag in terms of what the practices and procedures are.
Hmm. All right, thank you.
I've noticed the county commissioner in this room, and usually they notify the chair, and usually they have to bring a pass from the speaker's office when they enter it. Oh. But you're a former representative, so that's Commissioner Tom Workman from somewhere out west of here, county. We have Mark Anderson would like to, I just want to introduce him because he's, otherwise he'd be angry at me. Representative Mark Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ellison, I'd like to piggyback on something that Representative Bernardi was talking about. But it's more of a rural issue. She was mentioning the pedestrian and the bicycle, and of course, motorcycle does go rural too. But I have a lot of Amish in my area. Is there any figures as far as any incidences with and fatalities with Amish statewide on a highway level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, not that I'm aware of. And I'm looking at Ms. Berger, and she's shaking her head no, so not that we are aware of.
Okay, it's just something that came to my mind, and I thought I just wanted to clarify that, because I remember years ago that they, I think it was the state enforced the little orange slow-moving vehicle signed to be on the back, but they protested for religious reasons, and they no longer have that, so I didn't know if there was anything that is going to keep these people safe.
Mr. Chair, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Anybody in the audience has questions? Anybody out in the hall wants to answer questions? If not, let's adjourn.